Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you are listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee Talk Radio shows are part of the Coffee Party Be the Media Project. You can join our team by going to www.coffeepartyusa.com, go to volunteers, and tell us, I want to be the media. I'll be so excited when you get a hold of us. So welcome to the world of Blog Talk Radio. We've already had about 8 breakdowns, and so full disclosure, fair warning, transparency. And if our friends in chat could let me know about give me a mic check for volume, I'd really appreciate it. I think Blog Talk has just become very popular and therefore a little bit challenged. So I'm enjoying a sun break right now. Sunshine, sunshine. My dog, Jack, wants to go outside. I hope you don't hear him bark. Debbie Lynn Molyneux, how about things in Portlandia?
Well, it's not raining at the moment, but we do not have sun here. Haven't seen it for days.
I know. I haven't either. I was out there doing the little sun dance out in the puppy porch. It was amazing. Well, and I'm glad it's sunny because this is a we're going to dabble in the dark arts, so to speak, today. I mean, we're going to talk about, we hope to be able to talk about things inciting civility and reason, because current events are just too much to ignore, and let's just launch. So both Debbie Lynn and I have been business owners. Full disclosure, my business incorporated very quickly. But we agree upon this. If I ran a business and voters were my customers, I would set up a system very much like what we have today. It's predictable. It's controllable. We all love a good versus evil story and all use customized media to play into different factions of who is good and who is evil, keeping the focus away from all the tax incentives and business subsidies that are being handed out in Washington, D.C. on a regular basis, I'm going to add. And every investment I would make for that business, whether it's in commercials, killing a GMO labeling bill, or demonizing anyone who wants to control how many guns their evil cousin can buy, provides me with more control of the system. As a corporation, I don't have to vote myself. My money has controlled the outcome of the election already. Now, why are we talking about this? On Tuesday, I posted in Facebook, how many corporations are going to the polls today? None. Why? Because they're not citizens. The comments I got were amazing. Here's DS. Why cast a vote when you can buy them in bulk? HC said, the Supreme Court thinks they're people and that their money equals speech, and soon they'll have religious freedoms. HB said, when only about 55% or even less of Americans bother to vote, it is the corporations who control the outcome. Whose fault is that? And then there's my favorite one, DF. He said, what a great question. That makes a very important point. Besides corporations not going to the polls today, they aren't registered to vote, nor do they have voter ID. Yet with their unreported campaign contributions, they buy more influence than all registered voters put together. Makes no sense that the Supreme Court majority knew what they were doing when they got what they intended in their Citizens United vote. Are they, too, in the pockets of the corporations that are elevated to citizenship? So there you go. Wasn't the what I expected, but it's what we got, and it got me to thinking. So somewhere along the way, we all seem to know, we all know that their money became more important than our vote. Corporate campaign contributions, indirect contributions through nonprofits, lobbying, and media are all high-priced elements in a strategy for financial control. The payoff is huge. According to an NPR article, for every dollar spent on lobbying, the company's got $220 in tax benefits. $1, $220. So, what do we do? More importantly, the ability of the work of the Americans, our ability to work through our differences is made impossible by the strategic use of polarizing rhetoric. We need to talk about gun safety, religious freedoms, the broken economy, and so much more. But if we could talk, we actually would solve our problems. And the financial control being perpetrated by applying cash to our wounds would end. Is there another explanation for our inability to have a civil conversation about gun safety? 80% of Americans, many of them NRA members, want some common sense safety measures put into place. And meanwhile, we bicker like the Hatfields and the McCoys. Hardly a week goes by without we having to endure another gun tragedy. Or as one of the articles we posted on Lunch with Loudon Facebook page today, an active shooter. We posted lots of information about gun safety on Lunch with Loudon. Lots. Both sides. Everybody's side. Data, data, data. But neither side of the aisle helps because they are both cashing in on the issues remaining unsolved. The heroes in the seaweed, those who listen to the people and try to make something happen, become nothing more than martyrs on a pyre of campaign contributions. The real damage is to the American psyche. Our country does not walk, talk, or smell like a democracy anymore. And what you can expect, every time I say this, what I get is somebody who's saying, this is a republic. Like that was germane to the conversation. I guess some think that the tyranny of the minority is what you expect in a republic, or I guess business rights trump citizen rights in a republic, or I guess religious rights are limited to the chosen flavor of a chosen faith and non-existent to the rest of us, even if we are the majority in a republic. Okay, I'll stop that rant. But for the record, the United States is a constitutional based republic with a strong democratic tradition, according to the CIA fact. So let's not go there, please. The key word here is constitution-based, which should mean citizen-based, and which should not mean business-based. Business does not participate in the system as it exists as individuals. It conducts itself with every leverage tool it can get out of our elected. It also leverages itself with every referendum citizens try to pass. The best example of this in this week was the GMO labeling initiative in Washington State. Debbie Lynn and I both got to watch ad after ad about this. We posted the regional discussion.
Very one-sided ads, we might say as well.
Right. So we put up a Rachel Maddow piece that sort of points to the absurdity of all this on Lunch with Loudon Facebook. Even though the ballot issue had overwhelming public support, the yes side was outspent $22 million to $6 million, and all but $550, yes, less $1,000, was from out-of-state concerns like Coke, Pepsi, Monsanto, and the rest of the band, you know? The usual suspects came in and overwhelmed a state intention. Freedom of speech? So say the Supremes. Out of line, even if legal? So say the rest of us. I mean, seriously, just because you can doesn't mean that you should. So the game plan today is to see if we, consenting adults, can talk about either this week's vote, this week's shootings, this week's activity in Congress, and take the high road on our way to finding good common ground. So let's incite some civility and reason, shall we?
Let's go for it.
Just a technical thing
right now. If you're listening online to us, I understand that Blog Talk is working for some and kind of cutting in and out of the other for others. If you are where you can call in, you call in at 646-929-2495. And just listen on the phone. We won't call on you unless you press one. But we would love to talk to you, too.
Oh, thanks for doing that. I sort of give the forewarning that there's something dodgy in Blog Talk land, but it's all good. We'll stick this out together. And So we have callers in the queue, Debbie Lynn. Is there anything you want to say about this subject or, you know, where this puts you before we bring in our friends?
Yeah, well, I just want to go back and point out that there is always a way to find common ground if we are willing to give up our I'm right and you're stupid perspective. And on some issues, it's harder than others. I'll grant you that. Even on one of the most polarizing issues out there on abortion, there is common ground to be found on reducing unwanted pregnancy. On gun control, surely we can find common ground on public safety and mental health. On campaign contributions, surely we can find a way to make sure that money doesn't trump actual voter and community interests. But let's dive in.
So our first caller today just fell off. Oh my gosh.
I still haven't been
Bob,
here. I'm going to open up the mic.
Okay.
Bob, are you there?
He's not. We'll come back.
He's not. Okay. He's still showing up on my board.
Okay, so instead, Bob, come back to us when you when things are working for you. We're opening the line to area code 404. 404.
Good afternoon, ladies. Bobby Rodrigo. How are you?
Hey, Bobby. And how have we inspired you today?
Well, you know, I just happened to catch your blog, and I just happened to be able to call. So sometimes it's hard on the weekends, but I had a feeling you were going to be mentioning the 522 bill. I'm deeply, deeply disappointed in the vote, of course, and obviously the money that was spent has been an issue. I mean, we've all been talking about the money that's being spent up there. The vote 54% to 48%, I guess, was the last thing, and they were hoping that the write-in ballots, you know, the mail-in ballots would bring it up, but it just doesn't look like that's going to happen, unfortunately. And it's a great disappointment because I was looking at that as a way that big money was finally defeated in an important election that could have been a linchpin, just like the California one, of course, that was defeated. You know, that could have been a launching pad for this very important issue, of course, because I know that you guys discussed the food justice issues a lot. I actually spoke with Jeffrey Smith last night briefly, and we talked about this as well. We were covering some other ground.
I want to launch in here for just a second, Bobby, because the ads that the No on 522 campaign, so this is the people who do not want GMO labeling, got together, and of the $22 million spent, $11 million came through the Grocers Marketing Association. So these are other companies that are trying to hide their funding of the No on 522. And those were the only ads I saw. I never saw a yes on 522, living in an area that is, you know, is adjacent to Washington and sharing a media market with them. And they are slick. I mean, they have an organic farmer saying no on 522. They have a scientist saying no on 522. So they have all these people doing commercials for them that are saying, this is a bad bill, it's poorly written, it's going to cause confusion, it's going to make our food cost more. And people, because there's no truth in advertising for political ads, none, they get away with it because people say, oh, look, this is a respected person, I should listen to this ad.
You know, it kind of goes, it's interesting. I was having a discussion last night with one of the people I work with here in Atlanta on Monsanto I've discussed on our radio shows that I was involved in the last two marches, for example. And she actually asked me, she goes that, you know, I'm hearing some, and she lives here, and she was asking me, she was hearing some comments about, you know, the cross seeding and the hybrid seeds, which of course is a completely different issue, and which is what's been kind of promoted. And I don't know if you're aware, but I guess it's, let's see, maybe three or four episodes ago, David Frum was on Bill Maher, for example, and he was on there with the gentleman, the director of GMO OMG. And Frum went into a colloquy about GMO, and he did the same type of comments with hybrid seeds, you know, there's nothing wrong with this, et cetera. And what really annoyed me both about the fact that he was doing that is that he wasn't being countered properly by somebody who was supposed to be very knowledgeable of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the timing of the bill, you know, the Ocean Robbins, I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but these
yep.
are the big yes. And Jeffrey Smith and those guys, they just did a big GMO summit in the last 2 weeks to kind of coincide from a timing standpoint with all of this. And you're so right that there's so much deception that's been put out. And one of the things also you may have seen is there were some reports that some of the organic stores or
mm-hmm.
distributors that are members of the GMA were, you know, either knowingly or unknowingly funding the fight against GMO labeling. It's crazy. It's crazy.
It really is. And just to address the seed issue for just a minute, just it gives people kind of a convoluted an idea of how convoluted it is. Monsanto is now starting to patent heritage and heirloom seeds. So these are
yeah.
the ones that have not been altered, and Monsanto is now starting to patent them.
Yeah.
And my objection is less to the hybridization where we're crossbreeding plants for better. You know, we've been doing that without science for a long time. But
yeah.
when we start injecting pesticides into the food to make it more pest resistant, I don't want to eat past the GMO that I'm totally like freaking out about.
Well, obviously is extremely important, and it is the other as well, because you're talking about the real GMO problem. Cross-seeding hybrid seeds has nothing to do with GMO per se. That what really is the problem is that they're actually going in and breaking into the DNA
right.
of the seed and altering it chemically. They're not altering it with another seed.
This isn't like the old days where we used to splice two branches together and see what came out as a hybrid.
Right. I mean, they're actually modifying a living organism with fake stuff. and then when they're selling us down the road, saying, you know, well, what we're doing is really just another hybrid. Well, that's not what you're doing. That's why it's called genetically modified. It's a lot different than just, even the injecting the pesticides or even having the pesticides. And it's making, and again, you're even with the pesticide stuff, of course, making the seeds, they're resistant to pesticides, and that's another excuse that they use.
Until the insects modify, and then they have to spray more pesticides.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a whole crazy thing.
I can insert in here, I think a big part of what you're talking about, too, is the fact that, I have a science background. I've worked in labs. And
right.
we were working with GMO items in the early 90s in this research and development lab I was involved with. And
right.
Boy, I'll tell you, we could contain that thing inside a hood. We could contain it inside a laboratory. But what's even removed it to our huge climate-controlled, filtered out, filtered in, walk through the water in your boots to go into the greenhouse, that stuff escaped. And
yeah.
It was our job to monitor that. And so not only are people choosing this, but it goes rogue on you. And to say it doesn't is crazy. I mean, there's a huge wheat scandal here in Oregon because organic wheat was found to have GMO wheat in it.
I remember that.
And if anybody understands the contamination of a crop, you know, for the market that wheat was grown for, it is dead. It is zero. It is ruined. You know,
yeah.
because you and I pay, you know, $3 a pound instead of 50 cents a pound for flour because it's GMO free. And they
yeah.
utilize agricultural processes that are more expensive in order to provide us with that. And so it escapes. So here I am a scientist, and I'm saying to myself, I'm not inherently against science moving us forward. We have a big world to feed now. The population has doubled in my lifetime. And we have a lot of things to consider because, you know, not every kind of rice grows with the UVB exposure it has now. Not every kind of corn grows with the new atmosphere we have. So I get it that science needs to keep moving. What I resent with Monsanto and big agribusiness like it is that they have thwarted the regulatory process. So the USDA is now virtually worthless in terms of, I mean, how many years should you have to study the effects of one of these things before it goes to product, where it goes to market, you know? Before it's in production.
Exactly.
So why aren't we, I mean, okay, so if it takes 5 years, so what? If it takes 10 years, so what? If it's going to move us the way we as a society, and frankly, we as a planet, want to go,
right,
then so be it. I mean, Lord knows other things were tested longer. Think penicillin. I mean, penicillin would have taken even longer if there hadn't been a war, and they just had to risk it.
That is very true.
So,
that's a very good analogy, absolutely.
Why are we giving up on scientific method here? It is science that is producing these things. Why are we shortchanging science? We're doing it in pharmaceuticals. We're doing it in agriculture. Go ahead.
Obviously, the answer in Monsanto, I submit, I think you agree with, is strictly the money stuff. I mean, they got, you know, you look at the history of, and you mentioned the time when this was going on initially in the 90s. You look at, if you track the appointments, you look at Bush 1, Bush 41, he appointed the same gentleman that Obama 44 appointed to be involved in the same exact process. The vice president of their PR department for Monsanto, same exact guy. So you know it's certainly not a partisan appointment. You can't turn around and say, well, the Republicans are doing it or the Democrats are doing it. No, money's doing it. You know, and it was the first appointment, Bush 41, where that's when they gave them the pass to not have to go through the process while they're studying it, a brand new form, which you were personally involved with. It's amazing. And it's true. You know, when I went to the GMO, we organized one here at the Morehouse School of Medicine here in Atlanta. And one of the things that struck me most about the presentation was how significant it was that Europe put the brakes on all of this in their continent. Because if it wasn't for them, pretty much there's a good chance our world food supply would be completely controlled by now. You know, and I think a lot of people miss that in this big battle. And that's why it's such a crime to me that we're not able to pass. I mean, the first thing that should happen in Washington and in California should, you know, go grab the politicians and bang their heads against the wall and say, you need to legislate this. You know, and meanwhile, we have things like the TPP, the TPIP going on, or TIPP, whatever the hell it is, going on that is supposedly going to empower Monsanto that much more, especially on our soil. You know, so it's one of those areas, again, that we all talk about here in the Coffee Party and throughout the activist movement about how much money makes it very frustrating for us to do something about it.
Yes, yes, yes. And so if we sort of keep to the theme of this show, right, how do we have this conversation in such a way that people, I mean, we're kind of speaking to the choir right now, Bobby. You agree, Debbie
yeah.
agrees, I agree. We're all, I don't know how close to the land you are, but I certainly have, you know, I was raised in farm country. I understand the plight of farmers. I understand I've worked in the canneries. I've worked in the, I mean, I definitely grok the issues here.
Yes.
But what I want to ask people who are, you know, think we're all nuts because we're just fearing the future. So first of all, I love technology. I love science and I love advancement. And so I'm just I have a hard time not being offended by the notion that asking the question, why have we shortened the test time? Why have we shortened, why have we reduced the environmental impact of these things, the evaluation of that, to virtually nothing? Why have we allowed money? Why do we let some dude in a boardroom tell farmers what's okay?
Yeah, it's amazing.
And
it's amazing.
It is. And certainly our libertarian friends that listen into the show, you know, we see them in chat and they're saying, you're right, you know, because it really shouldn't be up to government. But on the other hand, they're, you know, we government, it's kind of like the government gives them a shorter and shorter bar to jump. So instead of the market setting the bar, the government is setting the bar quite low. Now, we as the market have always our ability to say, I don't buy Coca-Cola products, I don't buy Pepsi products, I avoid Monsanto products, I avoid anything that the Koch brothers did. You know, but you know what, I'm getting down to, I'm going to have to grow my own everything because it's very difficult to step outside their reach. Government, these low, low, low government standards have sort of usurped the whole market notion.
Go ahead. From the standpoint of trying to get, you know, having a conversation, I know one of the ways that I think is good, and you mentioned it just now, is we move the marketplace. You know, we use the dollar as part of our activism, and you know, that certainly is a major part of it. I know that that's pushed from a lot of the like the GMO project and for the Institute of Responsible Technology, which is right up your alley, what you're talking about, the IRT, that's what you're talking about when you come to sciences. You're talking about responsible technology, obviously. And, you know, that's one way to advocate it. The thing that I do is I do two things when I talk about this, and because I have a conversation a lot, you know, and I want to, is I first discuss how this is not a partisan issue by doing the comparison of Bush 41 and Obama 44, you know, appointing the same people around the Monsanto subject, for example, without getting into the rest of it. And then I jump into what actually is genetically modified organisms as opposed to, you know, having anything to do with the food supply, et cetera. You know, and then I go from there, I go into a little bit about the way that we farm, which is all the subsidies go to big farming, and nothing goes to the little farmer. You know, we have people who are paid not to farm, which is absurd. So I try that, you know, along with, you know, I try, when it comes to the food thing, the corruption angle of it, because of course everything that you and I advocate on through the coffee party is about corruption. There's nothing that isn't about that. We're dealing with money at every turn, and money inside of our elected officials, you know, everywhere. You know, so it always winds up with that. But I try and go the other way to keep it more relaxed, because I do talk to a lot of people who don't necessarily have the day-to-day ideologies that I have, whatever, you know, whether they're conservative or liberal, whatever it is. And I just try to talk about the subject matter. And I absolutely have people interested. I'm constantly posting, like you are. I mean, I know from knowing you that this is a very important issue. You're always putting out stuff like that, and I am as well. And I'm totally involved in this. And I think that's one way that we can do it without getting into a heated stuff, because I don't really have too many heated discussions about this. But I think I am working on starting to do legislative requests at the local level to try and do something about stopping it. I'm going to go to the Atlanta City Council, and I'm going to go to Cobb County, and I'm going to go to Cherokee County here in Georgia with a model piece of legislation that gets vetted and see what I can do at the beginning of the year, like I do with the NDAA nullifications, because this is ridiculous. Every time they turn around and they keep pumping all this money in, you know, maybe we need to go back down to the local level. You have great local elected officials in Oregon, and maybe that's another way there.
So. Right, this is a huge deal here. So, listen, we have another caller. If you want to stay on, you're welcome, Bobby. We can bring in Bob Woodburn. He's in area code 641. Opening your mic now. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Hi, thanks, Janine. How are you and Debbie Lynn today?
Hey. We've launched into a subject that woke us both up.
Yes. So, we talked the other night about the Second Amendment. So I'm not sure exactly where you want me to go from here, because,
well,
as I said in chat, I'm not really that versed on the GMO issue.
Well, let me give you a segue here, Bob. One of the things that has a similarity to what we're talking about here, which we had overwhelming money that influenced the outcome of an election in the state of Washington on GMOs. The other thing, when Obama first got elected, there was 80% support for some form of background checks on any gun purchases, limits of ammunition, of being able to buy magazines of huge amounts of ammunition in them, and providing more mental health services as a way to move forward on preventing something like the Sandy Hook Elementary School or what happened here 2 days prior to that in Oregon where we had a guy shooting in the mall.
Right.
So we're looking at, like, how do we find that kind of, you know, and the NRA just killed it dead. They had bought so much political plot with our elected officials that the NRA just killed it, no matter that 80% of the American public wanted it.
Well, I understand that, but I also understand that one of the things that the NRA and I agree on is the vestment in the people of the Second Amendment.
So say a little bit more about that, the investment in the people of the Second Amendment.
Okay, the right to keep and bear arms is not vested by the Second Amendment in a well-regulated militia. It's vested in the people by the amendment's own terms. It doesn't say the right of the well-regulated militia to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Yes. And this is always an interesting question for me, Bob, because you're probably the perfect person to give just a thoughtful answer. But I don't understand the whole slippery slope notion of, for example, filling the gun show loophole. You know, I mean, if you have to, in the state of Oregon, you have to have a background check. Certain things have to happen if you buy a weapon. But they can get around that at gun shows. And it was on, I think it was in the, wasn't it on the legislative docket this past January, Debbie Lynn, do you remember? Anyway, the point is, how can undoing unforeseen loopholes be considered a slippery slope? You know, why is it thought as if you do this, then it's just the next step towards taking my guns? I don't get that. And so I don't know why that's important. I do know that it's a rhetoric, that it's a strategically polarizing concept, and I know that it's sourced by think tanks that include people like the NRA. I get that. But I don't get why the average guy would think that having to have a background check at a gun show is somehow
infringing on
wrong.
The Second Amendment rights.
Right. How does that work?
See, the problem is that an individual has the right to keep and bear arms, okay? Anything that is done by Congress or by the government of the United States that interferes with that right has to have a compelling interest relative to the facts of that case, that particular case. Okay.
So the example of a felon can't own a weapon, this is logical to people,
right,
and they accept that?
Right, because he has that particular person has a propensity to engage in actions contrary to society, including but not limited to using a weapon in a time, place, or manner without concern for laws regulating same.
If I may,
what you're
saying is exactly what I believe that Jeanine and Beverly Lynn are discussing here. You've just given a compelling reason why someone shouldn't be allowed to own a gun, and that compelling reason would be exposed
by having background checks, because otherwise,
right, but also,
you do not
also
have the
remember
checks,
that
you can't expose it.
Right, but remember one other thing. They also, as a person, have a right to privacy, okay? And if you're background checking everybody, you are not just violating the personal privacy of the individual who may be a felon, who may have a propensity for violence, yada-da-yada-da-yada-da. You're opening everybody's private life, including their mental health history, which may have nothing to do with their willingness to be violent with a firearm in a manner, you know, inconsistent with time, place, or manner of expression as to firing that firearm.
Yeah, I disagree with you there, because the privacy laws that are enumerated in the Constitution are done so under the Fourth Amendment. And
right.
if you do not suffer any loss, then you don't have a quote unquote violation of privacy per se, unless it's done with due process. Now
wait one moment there, okay? You have a personal liberty to your privacy. That was clearly held in the which case is it?
It's, oh, I don't disagree
the
with
one
that.
That's
I don't.
The precursor,
I don't disagree with that. I don't
the precursor
with that.
To Roe. You know the
that's
one
right.
I'm talking about. The one that
that's
permitted
right.
birth control and put birth control off limits.
That is correct, and that's a very important distinction, because you raise a very good point there. And Roe v. Wade is actually decided on privacy and nothing more, and that's why it's
right.
an important decision, without question.
So there's a, yeah,
but
just,
what
to,
I
just,
mean,
just to let you, I'm just going to provide some background here, guys. It was decided by virtue of the Ninth Amendment, the right to privacy. The court cases are the Griswold and the Eisenstadt case and the interracial marriage
the one
of
the
Loving
thinking of, yeah, Griswold's the one I was thinking of.
Right,
yes.
And they use the Ninth Amendment.
Thank
you're right.
You.
They use the Ninth Amendment because they say,
yes,
obviously,
the penumbra of the Ninth
exactly
Amendment.
Covered. Right, right. what I'm saying is that we know that our government is allowed to regulate. It is certainly allowed to regulate under the Commerce Clause, for example. So it is allowed to establish rules. Now, I'll give you an idea where I'm coming from. I am anti-guns in our society 100%, but I am a constitutionalist. So in order for me to achieve having no guns in society, the proper step for me to take, in my view, is to have a constitutional convention and repeal the Second Amendment. Until that time, if that ever happens, I do not agree with any laws that restrict the ownership of guns that are not reasonable. So that gives you the kind of quandary that I am in. But I will not.
So
I,
how
I
do we? So
ago.
How do we? Here's the other voice. The other question is that we are in 2012. We had 35 active shootings in this country. So 35 people went into a public place with a gun and shot people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
35. They've been this year. I mean, we've had. We had one 2 days ago. We had the New Jersey Mall happening and the LAX happening both this past week.
Yep.
So how do we, as a society, to maintain our safety, deal with the situation where we have people who have access to guns everywhere, who are obviously either too angry with the government itself, as the guy in LA was, or mentally unstable, who want to do a suicide by cop, or, I mean, what as a cultural, what do we do? Do we just say,
we gotta live with it. That's the problem.
I think that background check on every gun purchase that there is in the United States of America, just like we have a license to drive, just like we have everything else. I think we should have background checks, because background checks, in my view, do not interfere with the ownership of guns by people who are legally able to do so just by being not criminals. Because that's
Bobby,
what we're talking
about. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
if you went to the DMV and they wanted to do a background check so you could drive, would you be willing to undergo that?
They actually do a background check if I can drive on the basis of my driving record. They already do that. So
yeah,
so
if they open your medical records and everything else that goes into a background check federal government, would you be willing to expose yourself to that on the basis of that one individual who went through Santa Monica Farmers Market and killed 13 people because they were just bent?
No, I think
let me intervene here for just a second. I'm going to step in for just a second. So, you guys, background checks are not all the same, right? I mean, there are background checks for credit. There are background checks that are, like MI6 would do,
right.
There are also, like in Oregon, the background check that you get to renew your license or to get a license has to do with any wants, warrants, any outstanding relationship with any other DMV in the United States of America. And so it's not really necessarily criminal, but, you can't come get a license in Oregon if your license is in bad standing in Vermont. You
that's
know what
a compact
I mean?
Law.
So they do check
that's
you
out.
Compact
law. And, right, that's a compact
right.
law.
Right, plus you have to have insurance. And so they
right.
check that out. They confirm
right.
your insurance. And now, because of the Bush administration wanting to make state driver's licenses a form of national ID, they also verify your citizenship.
Right.
And so
I'll give you a background check that's even more serious than that for a firearm.
Well, and I want to add one other thing here.
The one that's even more serious is the confirmation for federal office.
Yes.
They poke a microscope, you know where.
TSA.
Yeah, and then the press has a field day with the proctology report.
There you go. I'm going to call on Debbie Lynn.
One thing that we haven't touched on here in this whole issue, though, too, which always, everybody always goes to the car example and the gun example. Cars are manufactured for the purpose of transportation, not for the purpose of shooting and killing. And I just want to point that out, that the intention of a car, while it can be used to kill, it is not the intention of the purpose of the thing itself. With a gun?
The purpose of the thing itself, the gun, is to kill. But remember that it has within that definition the killing of animals for food, the killing of people who have broken into your home, offensive weapon.
There's actually no definition of what is in the Second Amendment. Let's stay within the Second Amendment. So essentially,
Second Amendment makes it a protective device. Clearly,
that's what it is against the
well-regulated militia.
Not against. It's not
so
against.
Yes.
That. But
because
check,
even though that militia is necessary to the security of a free state, the framers clearly intended that what was done to them by the Redcoats was not going to happen in their country.
As far as the background checks are concerned, the only issue
we were an occupied colony, remember?
Hold on a second.
The
medical records and the mental stuff, that's got nothing to do with background checks in my view. The only background checks that I support, and I support every gun sale, should have a background check, period. I don't care where it is, what kind of show it is, whether it's private or not. If I sell a car to somebody, I've got to go through a registration process. The gun thing should be the same thing. Now, I'm a veteran. The whole works. And like I said,
I would prefer that there are no guns in society, but I'm a Second Amendment. I'm an amendment guy. I like them all. Give me the entire 20 that are relevant. What I'm saying to you is the only
I just want to let you all know that we've got three other people that have lit up the board
that are waiting to get in here.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll yield the floor and let you and Bobby and whoever else is on the line take over for a bit. Okay?
Hey, thank you, as always, Bob. Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good one. Bye.
All right, I'm opening up area code 908. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon. Who are we speaking with today? Area code 908.
Chad, is this you?
Stepped away. We'll mute him.
We'll come back.
We'll come back. That's okay. I think it's interesting that we have this situation of, a Constitution, an intent of the Constitution, trying desperately every day to live within the confines or alter that Constitution. And the only thing that anyone's ever said to me that made me think twice about my notion, we are the oldest experiment, this republic has the oldest experiment in democracy in the modern world. And for these 200 and however many years, what has made that possible? Well, I'm not really sure, but I do believe it starts with the fact that of how this Constitution is put together and the checks and balances that we have in place to keep any one part of our government running away with the rest of us. Does the presence of weapons in our society make some potential dictator or some potential political coup kind of guy think twice? You know, we have no evidence, but
we do have evidence.
In the longest. Well, yeah.
And we do have evidence that if you have a gun in your home, you're four and a half times more likely to be assaulted or killed with that gun if you have a gun in your home. That's the scientific fact.
Well, what I want to say is the statistics are overwhelming. And I don't think anybody – I mean, Bobby just said he adores the Constitution and he abhors guns. Therefore, he will sleep easy when we've altered our Constitution, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
I get that. The data is in. It's not that great. Even all the stuff that was put out saying how crime rates dropped, when Carrie
they're talking specifically about murders. They're not talking about assault.
Exactly.
My only point here is that the
data is flawed. So if you are going to be a true constitutionalist and if you are going to look at this information and say, what do we do? Even if we are protecting this republic's democracy with the sheer threat of ability to retaliate, okay, let's just say that's true. I don't even know it's true. Let's say it is. How do we manage this collateral damage situation that we're faced with that? Okay, how do we somehow temper or handle the fact that if in order to preserve the union you must be armed, for gosh sakes, why does a man who, Oregon City, Oregon this weekend, a reserve duty police officer responds to a house fire and the guy he tries to rescue shoots him down,
And he died.
How do we manage these situations? I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying until we say, if we accept the fact that there are going to be weapons, how do we manage this? And that's the piece I don't get to hear from people. I want to there's a bunch of folks here.
Yeah, we got a whole ton.
Okay, and we're running toward the end of our time. I'm Jack Golding. I'm going to open your mic. I'm going to give you a couple minutes. I'm sorry. Yeah, there were a lot of people in front of you in line today. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Yeah. Okay. Let's make it short. I believe guns should be treated like cars. A car can be a weapon of destruction too. but I think you should pass a background check. Not only pass a background check, but the type of gun that people can own. You don't own a machine gun. You don't own a assault weapon, AK-47 or an MR-15. And I think mental health has a great feeling. I got a major in psychology myself, and I think you have to go into the guy's mental health. Like what happened in Texas with this major. He was in the Army. He was a major. What's his name? I forget.
Are you talking about the psychiatrist? The psychiatrist?
Yeah, psychiatrist, I call him. Yeah. And he was an Arab. Well, that just goes against people would think that would go against Arabs in general. But that's another topic. A lot of other things that need to be reformed. And they're just the Tea Party controls too much of the agenda of the Congress, and just about something like 40 some odd people Boehner's afraid of the 40 some odd Tea Party guys. And they should.
That's a brilliant segue, Jack. I'm gonna thank you for your statement. I'm gonna make a quick statement, then I'm gonna move to the next person. Thank you so much. It's always a great contribution.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, I think this point is well taken. We're dancing around where we started, which is basically how is it that money in politics, it trumps my vote. And certainly part of what money is used for is keeping this polarizing conversation going. And what Jack is pointing to is the fact that a minority of people in our governing body who represent less than 20% of Americans have such financial backing that the threat of removing financial backing, the threat of running a candidate against someone who's currently one of our elected is a huge determining factor in how these conversations go in the long run. And so it is intimidating. The only way 40 people can make this kind of difference is if there's 40 people and their ugly twin brother, so to speak, the big money that's behind them. I've been going to open area code 513. I believe this is Laura. Laura, we only have a couple minutes.
Okay, I just want to say, no more labels. Until you're a lawyer, one doesn't mean what you guys think it means. You would be shocked to know the little minuscule thing that can be a felony in some states, even the state of Ohio. Doesn't necessarily mean you even did an act that has any violence in it at all.
Oh, correct. Correct. I mean, think of all the white-collar crime, although a lot of white-collar crime has violent outcome, but it's not with a weapon. You know, there was a lot of foreclosures that ended up in felony prosecutions.
I mean, you could steal a $200 dress in some states and get convicted of a felony. Because the dollar amount for a felony crime in some states is so low. That's just really the truth.
I had no idea that felonies. I knew that the laws. I always presume the laws in all the states are different. I had no idea that a felony was not a felony. I thought it was a federal. So I'm smarter now because you called.
Yeah, it could be. Actually, my son-in-law got almost got convicted of a felony, but he plea bargained it down because at work he had a touch screen and the touch screen wasn't working and people were screaming at him. So he punched it a little too hard and it cracked, and his employer pressed charges against him for felony vandalism because the screen cost almost $1,000. And in the state of Tennessee, that's enough for a felony.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you for bringing that part to our attention. So I am at the end of our hour, and we're not out of callers, but I would be remiss if I didn't do this first. It's time to tell you about Coffee Party Internet Radio. Mondays, Dan Aronson hosts Press One for Democracy at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Dan's an amazing guy. Join him in an amazing conversation. Thursdays, Lunch with Loudon. Here you are. Thanks for coming. Saturday, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. And Sunday, we'll be having a new show that starts. I think it's called Politics Tennessee Style. I apologize if I got the state wrong. I'm waiting for the memo on the name of the host and his subject matter. I just learned last night that he would be beginning his show Sunday. So join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page for an announcement. Also, you can go to www.coffeepartyusa.com, and I'm sure there'll be an introductory blog about our new Be the Media project. Coffee Party USA is a totally grassroots, crowdfunded organization. Citizens United did not benefit us. If you'd like to become a member, go to www.coffeepartyusa, find the big red member button, join button, and wham, there you go. You can also just donate. And if you'd like to donate, we'll give you a thank you gift of a restaurant.com card. So with all of that, it looks like we've got 1 minute. Most excellent. And here's the last caller we're going to be able to bring into the queue. It's an electronic call, so I have no idea where it's from or who I'm talking to. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
This is Brown Beasley. It's too bad that I only get a minute, but I guess everyone else only got two. You've touched on so many different points. First, let me just say that it's refreshing to listen to a show on Blog Talk Radio that's completely slanted by some of the unthinking people on the right that just refuse to think, that find themselves angry for all of the wrong reasons, that can't that seem to mix and match terms such as communism, socialism, fascism all together, not knowing what any of them mean, and getting angry with you. To the point of hanging up on you, kicking you out of the chat room when you ask them to define such terms. I find that happens all the time. It's a common thing. They don't understand that fascism and socialism are probably just as far from each other as what you can get, and that what we're really not facing in this country is a onslaught or a push towards socialism or even communism. It's more of a fascism, more of a corporate intermarriage and control of government.
Yes. I had to amend my blog post because the original language I used was the unholy union of business and government.
Which is fascism, and it is unholy.
Yes.
And it's the cause, and it's the cause for everything. You mentioned real quick about the Tea Party being funded, and so well funded. I don't have any problem with their right to exist. And as far as funding goes, the entities behind politicians and the money that we're talking about, they contribute fairly equally to each group. And just as you said, it promotes and it continues the polarization. It also creates the talking point for our corporate cable media, which people are addicted to, even myself, knowing that they're telling me things that are not necessarily true or slanted from a particular ideology. I canceled my TV with Comcast. I used a big cable company, and I used them for all three things, phone, internet, and television. But I canceled the TV part, and I'm suffering from withdrawals. But I like the news that I'm only reading now. No one's talking to me, and I'm reading news off of the net. At any rate, it's just refreshing to hear people with a little bit more thinking and moderate sense of view than all of the conservative shows on Blog Talk Radio. And I called into another show on, I didn't know how extensive your network was. You know, some of these things are just run by one person. It seems like you guys are a little bit more organized and have a group behind. And, no, I agreed just about with everything that they were saying, except the only place that I didn't agree is that I don't have any solutions, and I don't know what to do, and I don't know that I want to take that time joining a group that's going to push to try to make some change when I think, when you understand the scope and the depth of the real fundamental problems, and, you know, your show description addresses it very well, that once you understand the scope, it's almost like trying to fight something that's almost too hard to beat.
Well, you know, thank you. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for saying that because, you know, we're a part of a movement, yes? And there's a movement afoot that basically all sees the end game of believing that once money and it's the inherent corruption that dovetails with excessive money in politics is managed, once we can manage that situation, that the elected will be free to actually represent us. And so we are one of many organizations moving in each in our own way toward ending the tyranny of money in politics. I know some people don't like tyranny, but I really feel it in my bones, and I get to speak for myself there. So when, you know, Ruth Strikers is doing it one way, Represent Us is doing another, Coffee Party is collaborating with many groups to let people know where they can have a point of impact in this ongoing battle to take the domination of money away from our political process. And so you're right where you need to be if you're frustrated because, you know, everybody listening today is also frustrated. And I don't know...
Well, you're more refreshing to listen to. I choose my words carefully. You're more refreshing to listen to, and I'm more closely aligned with the thoughts that I hear being expressed on your network. But I don't join anything. I'm too cynical. I don't join anything. I don't march to the beat of other people's drummers. And I don't know if I really, really play well with others because I have strong opinions and I stick to them, and I don't go with the overwhelming majority of people. And I think, you know, it might sound cynical, but it's my opinion that the powers that be, it's the answers aren't in the political process. To overcome, to do exactly what you say, to take money out of politics. And our system is far too dependent on it. I think it's close to 96.4 of all elections on a municipal level and higher are won by the person that raises the most money.
Ding, ding, ding. That's correct.
Yep.
Well,
yeah.
And, you know, that's the perfect ending comment. So thank you very much. I'm right there with you.
Real good. Take care. What's your name?
Janine.
Hi, Janine. I'm V. Brown Beasley.
And I hope you call again, Brown.
Certainly. Have a very nice day.
Thanks so much. So here we go. We've run a few minutes over, but I think it was well worth the time. I want to thank everyone for listening to Lunch with Loudon today. Coffee Party on.